You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes and touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Pretty Tony Morrison. You may know me as FBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 357. Woo-wee! On today's show, the Knicks lose a nail-biter to the vile and loathsome Brooklyn Nets. And I'm going to break it down for you. There's some fun stuff in here. Don't despair too much. I'll make it fun. Don't worry about it, okay? Lots of people said Timmy guarding Caris LeVert at the end of regulation was the wrong mistake, was the biggest mistake that any human being has ever made. I'm going to tell you why it was fine in this situation specifically. I'm also going to talk about some problems I'm seeing with the first unit. Sneak peek, those problems involve offensive cohesion and a lack of rim protection. Going to discuss some good things that I saw from Frank Ntilikina and Kevin Knox. Two pillars of the rebuild, so a pretty good game on that level. And I'm going to talk about a couple of stray thoughts involving Alonzo Trier, Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway, and more. We got a bunch of good stuff to talk about, even though this was a sort of frustrating loss. Before we start, just a reminder, 929-377-5103. Call us up, ask questions, leave your thoughts. If they're interesting, we will get to them on a voicemail bag. So, let's start the show. Hit it, Mark.
Yes!
Let's start things off with just a couple of general thoughts on the game before we get to some notes on specific players. Overall, tough loss, right? Tough loss. Everyone hates Brooklyn. They're annoying. They talk too much for how much they suck. Sean Marks is given all the credit in the world for being the greatest GM of all time. Sort of frustrating team to lose against, but whatever. You know, we all live to fight another day. Don't take it too hard. The Knicks played well enough to win in this one. They just didn't win, which is a different animal than playing well enough that they should have won. They could have won this game. But I'm not going to say they should have won this game. Not for sure, anyway. And that would have been a little bit more painful if they blew a game that they just had to have. It wasn't quite that, but painful nonetheless. Overall, I just want to say shouts to the Knicks for demolishing the Nets in the turnover battle. So that's a nice effort statistic. It shows that the coach is getting through to them. This was, I mean, they did as well as you possibly could with regards to turnovers in this game, literally. They finished in the 100th percentile in limiting their own turnovers. The Knicks didn't have a turnover between like the second quarter and right towards the end of the game with Hardaway. He turned it over on a pretty big possession, more on that in a second. But the Knicks only turned the ball over a little bit less than 5% of their offensive possessions, 100th percentile for all games played this season. On the flip side, they were 100th percentile in forcing turnovers. Or you could say the Nets were 0th percentile in limiting their own turnovers. However you want to slice it, I want to give the Knicks some credit. I thought they did a really nice job at forcing turnovers in this one, both through defensive intensity, playing the passing lanes, playing heads-up defense, and paying attention to what's going on all over the court, not just with your own man. They forced turnovers on 25% of possessions. So that's excellent. The Knicks did a great job there. But sometimes you just don't get the bounces. You can try real hard like they did, and you don't get the bounces. And on Friday night, they didn't get the bounces. The Nets got a bunch of favorable rebounds. They got a bunch of second-chance offensive points. Not even because I think the Knicks weren't boxing out, but just the way the ball was bouncing. A couple of tough calls, although those go both ways. The one place I thought the Knicks shot themselves in the foot a little bit is mid-range shots, something that we've had our eye on. I don't think that this was the result of poor offensive scheming. on Fizdale's part, although I only watched the game once, so that's kind of a provisional take there. But I did see a lot of possessions where the Nets, I'll give them credit, they played decent defense, and a lot of plays just broke down. Their first and second options weren't there, and they were kind of settling toward the end of the shot clock. It didn't seem like they were going out there and taking mid-range shots right at the beginning, and that's what the plays were designed for. So I don't think it was really a schematic problem, but again, would have to take a look at the game one more time. But, you know, the Knicks had an effective field goal percentage of 36%, which is fourth percentile. They shot the ball terribly, and again, part of that was all those mid-range shots. They were in the 93rd percentile for frequency of mid-range shots. And then the Nets, on the flip side, had kind of a lucky shooting night. You could chalk that up to some soft Knicks defense, and there was some of that, especially at the rim. We'll get to that in a second. But the Nets, just had a nice shooting night all around. They shot 62.5%. That's their effective field goal percentage, which, again, accounts for threes being worth 50% more than twos. And that overall shooting was in the 95th percentile. But here's the fun part. Without Kristaps Porzingis, the Nets just barely squeaked by the Knicks on a night where they were hot and the Knicks were ice cold. So, I don't know. You tell me. Which team would you rather root for in the long term? Huh? Which team? I want to talk about that end-of-game situation. If you didn't see the game, it was tied at, I believe, 103 apiece. And the Nets had the ball. And Caris LeVert had the ball. He had a hot scoring game. Scored a bunch of points. How many did he score? I have this somewhere. Caris LeVert scored 28 points. Okay, he's got the ball above the arc. Brooklyn space on the floors with shooters. So he's got an ISO to himself against Tim Hardaway Jr., not against Frank Ntilikina, the Knicks' best overall defender. Ntilikina was on the court, but he was against Spencer Dinwiddie to start the possession. So here's what I think about this. If your only goal is to win the game, you got to put Frank on LeVert there, and then you let Hardaway take Dinwiddie. I mean, it is the reason that you have a Frank, generally speaking, so that he can be unleashed on whoever you need to unleash him on at any point in the game, but especially down the stretch, and especially on a final possession, right? If this were a playoff game, I would say, inexcusable, Fizz, what are you doing? But if Fizz wants to, you know, claim some coachy shit here, I'm giving him that leeway. If he says that he wants to build up Timmy's belief in himself, and, you know, I think Timmy's got that, you know, I'm going to give him that leeway. I'm fine with that in game two of an 82-game rebuilding season. I'm not there behind closed doors. I don't see what I think these guys need in order to develop. If they're claiming development here, then I'm completely fine with that. I'm not really in a position to dispute that. I wouldn't be fine with that if we needed to win this game. And long term, there are some, you know, sneaky Illuminati-style benefits to that decision. More of a chance that the Knicks will lose if you're a tank conspiracy theorist. But again, you know, maybe this does help build up Hardaway long term. I'm not convinced that, you know, losing out on a possession at the end of the game to Caris LeVert is going to help develop Hardaway. But I'm skeptical. That doesn't mean that I know I'm right. I'm just skeptical. Sharing my take with you guys there. And if you're looking to say, no, this is a mistake no matter what, you could look at, it was a little odd that not only was Hardaway on LeVert and not Frank, but that Hardaway wasn't taking away LeVert's right hand. I don't have enough of a scouting report on LeVert to say right away in that situation, oh, he screwed up. But I'm watching the game. I'm listening to Clyde, who knows his basketball, but he's not one of these color guys who is like intimately familiar with the ins and outs of every single player's game in the league. And he was screaming the whole time, like, don't let him go right. Don't let him go right. So if Clyde knows that he's not supposed to go right, you better believe that the coaching staff knew that. And why wasn't that imparted to Hardaway? Maybe Hardaway knew that and still let it happen. That's one of those things you can never know, but it certainly raises a question. Was the coaching staff just sort of asleep here, or was this just a lack of execution on Hardaway's part? Tough to say. Interesting to ponder, though, right? At the end of the day, this sort of thing, you know, you can chalk a lot of it up to, this is a stat that's been thrown around the past couple weeks. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast, but since the Knicks cut Joakim Noah, the Knicks are the youngest team in the league by average age, which is incredibly fun. I think if you are a fan of my takes, that you will also be a fan of having this young team here. that we get to watch develop, and there's so much joy in that as a basketball fan. But the flip side is it can get a little sloppy down the stretch. The Knicks did a nice job at clawing back, not letting this game get away from them. Unfortunately, just didn't work out for them this night. I want to talk to you guys about the first unit and some struggles that I've seen out of them in the first couple games. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, and the number one source for local daily sports podcasts. Now, if you like local daily sports podcasts, you probably like attending sporting events, live sporting events. I know I do. First time I went to a New York Football Giants playoff game, I mean, that's sports for barbarians, right? But the energy just outside the stadium before I even got inside was so intense. I was like, holy shit, this is the playoffs. This is a different feeling than I've ever felt before. And that's the kind of thing that you don't get sitting at home watching your curved 4K TV. You know what I'm saying? With ultra dark blacks or whatever the fuck that it's due to say that you need to spend $3,000. The black is so black. You need to spend $8,000. All right. All right. Take it easy, 4K industry. You know, I see you. I know what you're up to. But yeah, live events. And if you want to go to a live event, you got to get tickets. That's where Vivid Seats comes in. You guys know Vivid Seats. You love it. It's an app. Find it wherever you find apps. You go there. You select your tickets wherever you want for sports, concerts, theater. They're fully guaranteed. And the best part is you can save $20 off of orders of $200 or more if you use the code LOCKEDON. Just use the code LOCKEDON to save $20 off $200 or more at your first purchase using Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats. So we've got two good looks at this first unit of Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway, Frank Ntilikina, Lance Thomas, and Enes Kanter. And there are two things that are jumping out to me that they're struggling with in particular. First is just general offensive cohesion. You're not seeing a lot of scoring off of assists. You're seeing a lot of isolation play right now. And one of those players who's getting those buckets is Kanter. And I will say that while you guys know I'm not a huge fan of his offensive game, because even when he is extremely effective and efficient, it doesn't necessarily get other players involved. I do need to recognize that that first part of being effective and efficient is not nothing and is valuable, and the Knicks do need it. It's that flip side that limits his effectiveness there. But in this game, you know, we saw the good and the bad there. I mean, Enes Kanter, to his credit, was getting buckets on Friday night. He was a big part of their third quarter run. He scored 29 points overall on 12 of 18 shooting. Got 10 rebounds to go with that. That was nice. But he had a very efficient offensive game. Tim Hardaway is another guy. He's getting a lot of isolation opportunities. He had 29 points, but those were not nearly as efficient on Kanter's. It took him 25 shots. But they needed someone to shoot because they're just not... I don't know if it's Burke, you know. I don't know if he's not doing a great job of getting the Knicks into the offense, but I suspect that's part of it. I know that Lance Thomas is not a great offensive player. He had some really good games in preseason. This was one of his worst games recently, offensively. We saw the full repertoire. We had a blown wide open layup. I'm not going to keep ragging on him, but I don't even really blame Kanter or Tim for what's happening, because I feel like the Knicks are just struggling so hard to generate offense as a team that they do then need to fall back on the isolation scoring abilities of those two guys. But there's something going on with that lineup that's not great. The exception that I think proves the rule in some ways was there was a great pick and roll with Burke and Kanter to get the and one to tie the game. The Knicks were down three heading into the final minute of the fourth quarter. But that, again, that was the exception, not the rule. They're just not playing very well with each other yet. I personally, I've been beating around this bush for the past couple minutes for some reason. I would like to see Frank get the ball more in that primary initiator role. I'd like to see him get more of those duties. I want to see him running more pick and roll with Burke used as a spacer. Burke can hit a three. He's not a great three-point shooter, but you can have him out there and play off ball and then have Frank run the pick and roll. he's shown a nice ability in the pick and roll, Frank, I think. And I need to see it a little bit earlier in the game. We didn't see it really much until the third quarter when he went on his own little run, which we'll talk about. So offensive cohesion, definitely a problem so far early with this starting unit. Another thing to look at, they're getting killed at the rim with this lineup. And as you know, as destructive an offensive force as Enes Kanter can be in a good way, I think he's equally problematic on the defensive end, and usually more so to the point where it makes his offensive contributions not enough to overcome what he is taking off the table. On defense, I mean, his help defense just isn't there. He doesn't recognize when he needs to come over. He doesn't get a piece of the ball. I don't know if it's because he's trying to position himself for offensive rebounding. And he's also, you know, this has been the book on him, but he got killed in the pick and roll a bunch. Him and Burke were getting killed in the pick and roll. The Nets shot 90% at the rim in this game. It's not all on Kanter, but he's a large part of it. And the Nets also shot, while we're talking about how well the Nets shot, 44% from three. So that's just a killer. Very hard to overcome that. But I will say the Knicks actually did a nice job of forcing the Nets into taking mid-range shots. The Nets killed it at their Morey ball shots, at their modern profile shots at the rim and beyond the arc. They shot really well from them. But their frequency wasn't very high at the rim or beyond the arc. So I'll say, nice job there. You know what I'm saying? Nice job there, Knicks, in limiting the types of shots that you want the Nets to take. Let's talk about Frank Ntilikina's game. Another nice game from Frank. His vision stood out to me in this one. He made a number of really excellent passes. In, I believe it was the first quarter, he had a strong drive to the rim, and he did a behind-the-back bounce pass out to the three-point line for a wide-open Enes Kanter, unfortunately, so it wasn't someone who could really take advantage of being open from three. Although he did take the shot, I like that Enes Kanter pulled the trigger. It just rimmed out, so tough luck there. But it's a difficult pass to make, and I thought it showed good awareness, good court vision. Maybe it wasn't the right move since it was Kanter back there. You could argue that the, you know, the galaxy brain version of that play is Frank taking it strong to the hole and driving a foul. But I did think it showed some of his, you know, really stellar vision. So I'm taking it as a positive. He also ran a beautiful pick and roll with Kanter, giving him a wide open layup, dropped in the nice pocket pass. That was in the second quarter. And again, I think they just got to run more pick and roll with Frank. I think he's doing well. I think they got to try it. He actually had a rare defensive, I don't want to call it a mistake, but breakdown in execution in the first quarter that I thought was interesting because it's illustrative of actually what makes him so good on defense. He tries to play the passing lanes, Frank, right? And by this I mean he's not always positioning himself between the man and the basket, which is one way to think of playing defense. He tries to position himself between the ball handler and his man. And when you do this, when you try to position yourself between the ball handler and your man, you are disrupting passing lanes. You're making it much more difficult for the offense to get into their sets because they have to think twice about even a basic swing pass to change what side of the court the ball is on. The flip side of this is if you don't have your head on a swivel for even a second, you can get backdoored easily. You've got the guy, let's say, you know, you've got the ball handler, top of the arc on the right elbow. You're kind of by the free throw line, right? And your guy's sort of on the left elbow, maybe out by the three-point arc. And you've got, you're in between the ball and your man, but you're not in between the basket and your man in that situation. And then the guy can cut backdoor. The ball handler can hit him for an easy layup. That happened in the first quarter. Frank actually got backdoored by Caris LeVert, who then passed it off to Jared Allen for the slam dunk shot, to use very current vernacular. So it's interesting. You know, what Frank does is a much more active way to play defense, but it does leave you open to that backdoor. If you can successfully do what Frank does, it takes a lot of energy, but it makes it much more difficult for your opponent. We saw a rare instance of Frank getting burned on that. I don't think that he should change his approach, but interesting to note. Frank was also victim of the grave injustice of the game, sponsored by Vivid Seats. He was guarding Kurucs, the Latvian, and he blocked his whack floater attempt and got called for a foul, which was garbage. When you watch the replay, it was actually another great example of how Frank uses his body to bump defenders off their spot while keeping his hands up. He's been doing such a great job of that this year. He's really using his strength, and he's not getting bumped back when guys run into him. It's just really great to see. And then in the third quarter, when they started to let Frank cook a little bit, to handle the rock a little bit more, to be the primary initiator, he reeled off 7 straight points. He had a bunch of nice just shooting moments off the bounce, coming around screens, looking smooth, looking natural, looking in rhythm. And then he got a steal, another defensive play, that led to a fast break for a transition 3 from Tim Hardaway Jr. to take the lead for the first time since they were up 2-0 at the start of the game. Overall for Frank, 9 points on 4 of 9 shooting, 4 assists, 0 turnovers. His typically fantastic defense showing a little bit of life on offense there in the third quarter. Still hasn't put it all the way together on that side of the court. We haven't gotten a full, complete performance from Frank, but we're seeing a lot of signs of improvement even from last year, and his defense looks improved from his already stellar defense of last season. So I'm just so happy with what we've seen from Frank these first two games, and it's done nothing to slow my unbelievably hopeful projections of him as the next Kawhi Leonard. I don't care. Yeah, come get me. I don't care. I love Frank, and I really believe in him. Talking about another rookie, or not another rookie, another, you know, pillar of the youth movement, let's move on to Kevin Knox. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So let's talk about Kevin Knox, a much better performance this time around than his first game of the season against the Hawks. I want to dip into this discussion of Kevin Knox by starting talking about a pair of drives in the first quarter from him. In the first quarter, he started off the game with a nice drive using his length. I forget who was defending him, but he used his length to keep the ball away from the defender and kissed it off the glass at a funky angle for a nice layup. It was a nice play. He used his physical gifts to extend and keep the ball at a place where his defender couldn't get to it. It was a sort of hard angle to hit the shot, but he finished well. Great play, even though it was decently contested. His next drive attempt was very similar, and he used his tools well to create a little bit of separation. But then he still had that funky angle. Instead of kissing it off the glass nicely, he threw it pretty wildly off the glass. Didn't even hit rim. I think it even led to a fast break the other way for the Nets. Then in the fourth, I said that I want to talk about a pair of drives. I lied. There's a third drive I want to talk about here. In the fourth, he was rejected by Jared Allen on an otherwise nice drive to the rim. So this has kind of resolved something for me. I think this is official. We can put this in stone. Kevin Knox needs to work on his finishing. That's something we'll keep an eye on. But the good news is he's really good at getting to the rim. He's got deceptive quickness with those long strides, covers a lot of ground, even if it doesn't look like his legs are moving particularly fast. He's got those giant tree-length strides, and it really helps him get to the rim. It makes perfect sense that finishing would be something that he needs to work on because he's still getting used to his body. Again, one of the youngest guys in the draft, youngest guy to ever lace him up for the Knicks. One thing is for sure, though, he's not afraid to pull the trigger. You can see he's got offensive aggressiveness. We don't need to coach that into him. So I think over time, he's going to get better at that. You know, he's still very young, very new to basketball. He's getting the ball to a place where it needs to be in order to get himself a good shot. Now he's just got to put it all together and work on his finishing. I'm very optimistic that he's going to get a lot better there. But again, something he does need to work on. He had his shooting was a lot better in this game. We talked about struggling with finishing a little bit, but his jump shots looked nice. He had a nice pull-up mid-range J off a dribble handoff screen from Vonleh, who's been setting really nice screens. He and Vonleh hooked up a little bit later. Thought this was interesting. He called for a Vonleh screen at the left elbow beyond the arc. And LeVert saw that screen coming, and so he leaned toward the screen. I'm not sure if he was going to try to fight over it or go under it, but he started trying to duck around it, and Knox saw him leaning, and rather than try to use Vonleh's screen, Knox calmly pulled up for a three and drained it. At the time, I didn't love the shot. My initial reaction, there were 7 left on the clock, but then when I watched the replay, I thought it actually showed a little bit of vet savvy with that lean, getting LeVert leaning and then pulling the trigger. So, you know, I've talked about this on the pod a bunch. In many ways, basketball is this kind of elaborate game of rock, paper, scissor. There's a couple of different things you can do. And if you can get someone guessing one way, you got them, even if you don't necessarily have the edge on them as an overall player. But if you can get them guessing that you're going to shoot and you're not, then you can run around them, right, on the pump fake. It's that kind of thing. So him taking that subtle advantage and turning it into an open jumper for himself, I thought was actually pretty interesting. And he heated up as the game went on. He still started a little bit cold in this one, but he had a nice three with 4 minutes left in the game to tie it at 93, showing a little bit of clutch gene. Like to see that early in a career. Overall, 17 points, 7 of 14 shooting, 3 of 4 from downtown. Nice game from Knox. And I like that he's looking to provide help defense. So far, it's resulting in outcomes that aren't necessarily beneficial in that possession. Like, he fouled someone under the basket, providing help defense. He fouled D'Angelo Russell, trying to tie him up as he sort of dribbled towards him, but Russell didn't have his head up, and so Knox thought that he could disrupt his dribble, wound up fouling him, so the outcome wasn't good. But I thought his thinking was he needs to tighten up the execution, but it's good to see him paying attention to the entire court and not just his man. I think that's a good positive sign from the young Kevin Knox. Let's talk about Mitchell Robinson. Just kidding, didn't play. Probably for the best. He's got a sprained ankle. He was dealing with that in preseason. Let the kid heal. There's no rush there. Alonzo Trier got burned on a pick and roll with Ennis on his first defensive possession. But soon after that, he made a nice play for the ball on Caris LeVert. He drove the lane. You can see I'm mentioning Caris LeVert a lot. He was very active for the Nets in this one. But LeVert drove the lane, and Trier got in his way. He let him get good positioning, but then he rose up, got a hand on his layup attempt, and got a little bit of a block. I don't know if he was actually credited for that. Was he? Let's take a look at Alonzo Trier. No, they didn't credit him with a block, but he disrupted the shot for sure, and it was a nice play. He had a nice driving dish to Vonleh, who drew the foul on a dunk shot, to use the popular vernacular of our times once again. So that was nice. But his shot wasn't falling in this one. He went just 2 for 8. 2 for 8, though, that's kind of like a Frank level of aggression. 8 shots. So this is something we've been looking for. His shot wasn't falling, but I'm not going to begrudge him those 8 shots. I don't think he forced it that much. I think he just didn't hit his shots in this one. I thought Vonleh stood out a little bit in this game. Again, he did a nice job not biting on a bunch of Ed Davis pump fakes in the first quarter. He drew a charge in the second. He wasn't outstanding, but I think he's holding his own out there. And I just want to say, I see you, Noah, doing a nice job. Burke, he's doing a nice job playing the passing lanes. I'll say this. He's doing a nice job playing the passing lanes, getting his little tiny mitts in the passing lanes, and he's trying to turn his long twos into threes. Part of that is they're setting him up for success there better by running the pick and roll a little farther out from the hoop so that when he comes off that pick, he can step into a three instead of stepping into a long two. That can make it harder for the roll man. He's got more space to cover from that pick. But if you're trying to free up Burke for a shot, I'd rather them free him up for a three than for a two. But I'm ragging on Ennis for his defense. Burke, he's getting abused defensively. He's getting abused. It's not just that he has trouble getting around picks, although that's a big thing that we've mentioned a bunch. It's that guys are so much bigger than him that they don't even have to be quick, and he doesn't have to be lazy for them to get by him off the dribble. We talked about Kevin Knox being deceptively quick with his strides because he has such long legs, right? He's a tall guy. Everyone is sort of Kevin Knox to Trey Burke when he's defending them because they're all significantly taller than him. Most of them, anyway, right? Forgetting the stray Trey Young of it all. But most guys are much taller than him, so they get like 2 strides on him and they're buying. And it's noticeable, and it's hurting the Knicks. Hardaway, what are you going to say? Professional scorer. They need someone to score. Not a hugely efficient game. Not a hugely inefficient game. I did think he chucked a little bit at the end of the game. But again, who is going to take those shots? I'm not so sure. And he did do a nice job of getting to the line. Got 7 free throws in this one. And we got the loss. But we did have a nice run in the third quarter. Erased an 11-point deficit. Nice to see the Knicks coming out strong in the third quarter. That's been something that's been identified by David Fizdale as something they need to improve on, something that they look to the better teams in the league, like the Warriors, who were so great in the third quarter. They're trying to emulate that. So when we're trying to grade out what Fizdale says he wants to accomplish and what the team is actually accomplishing, that was nice to see. That's it for today's episode. I want to thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you have a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already, and you will get the show the second it's released and not a second earlier. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. It helps us grow. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. Follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report for jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. You're going to mess that up, but then try to be chill the next time, right? That's all you can do. You're a human being. You make mistakes. Spit new to your pets. No excuses. Get that done. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it all the way down. Only salt the pasta water. Take that. For data, Biggie's better than Pac.